Welcome to The Good Stuff with Sonoma County Wine Growers. I'm Virginie Boone alongside Carissa Cruz, President and CEO of The Wine Growers. We're here to talk about what makes Sonoma County such a special place to grow, make, and enjoy wine.
And it is, and it's been an insanely busy week.
Okay, well, when is it not?
That's true. That is a very, very fair question. But lots of big events this week, actually.
Okay. Tell me more.
Tell you more.
Oh. Yeah. Okay.
Why? Thanks for
You're
asking.
Waiting. Do you need a bell?
I know. I do need my bell. Where is that? That would have made today great. Well, we kicked off the week with hosting the Top Psalm of America's. Mm-hmm. I guess competition is the right word to say.
Well,
they were vying for
scrimmage.
Scrimmage. But really fun. We did this in partnership with Doug Frost and Evan Goldstein, both master psalms who I'm sure you know well.
Semi-well.
Who are great. And so actually got to host psalms from around the Americas, so not just North America, as well as judges and key stakeholders that actually come in from around the world to sort of participate in the event. So a lot of fun. There was a lot of competition, but also exploring Sonoma County. So they got to go out to a number of sites and then have different wineries and growers actually join them back at the hotel sort of late night to host like the after party
bar. Always dangerous.
Which is very dangerous. We did not, and our team did not specifically opt into those because we wanted to make sure we were bright eyed for the things we were hosting. But it was really fun. We were able to do a Sonoma County Masterclass, which we love to do. It's kind of our tried and true for everyone when they were here earlier this week and, you know, pour the main different varietal wines from here, kind of get the perspective of both grape growing and winemaking and sort of all the diversity of the region. So that was sort of key. And then we hosted dinner for everyone, 70 plus folks out at Dutton Ranch.
Pretty great.
Yep. Up in that red barn. You've been up there.
I have.
Beautiful spot. So really nice. And then went from there and got on a plane and went to Houston with our Rockets partnership.
As you do.
As you do. So, okay. Yeah, that continues. We're like in the thick of the basketball season now that we've officially transitioned from, you know, football to in the middle of basketball and soon to be
baseball. The best one.
So although it is kind of fun though. I mean, I think, you know, historically we wouldn't really think about wine as it relates to the different sports seasons, but now it very much does.
Very much. Yeah.
And we're in the middle of the hockey season still with the Coachella Valley Firebirds. So wrapping up one, starting the others. And in the middle of the other two. So there you go.
Okay. So hockey's not year round?
Well, it's not. No. It's it takes a reprieve in the summer months.
Okay. Makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, maybe there's some club or something, but not official. Okay. Not official part of the tournaments.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Okay. And what else? I mean, I think you've got some.
What else? Is that not enough?
Leadership Academy stuff coming up? It's not. I have further questions.
So many questions. Yeah. So coming up, we officially, at the beginning of February, launched our fourth Leadership Academy class of our foundation. So 20 men and women who are vineyard employees that got nominated by their employers to be part of this 6-month-long program. 17 men and 3 women this year.
Very cool.
Which is very cool. So about we estimate about 18% of our vineyard workforce are women. So kind of following along the trends. Yeah, very good. Representative. So we have the next class is coming up next week. Going to be focused on more around sustainability. So really diving deep into what does it mean to be sustainably farming. Rachel Thralls, who is a certified psalm, who does a bunch of work with us, is going to actually curate a wine tasting and education seminar for them. And then they are going to tour Sonoma Couture Winery.
Mm-hmm. So that's fun. That's a fun day out.
I mean, I think it's surprising. I mean, maybe not surprising because I know this of even some of the growers. Like, they are so focused on growing the grapes year round that once they kind of deliver them to the winery, it's like, okay, we're done. On to the next vintage.
Of course, yeah.
But to actually have the employees be able to see what happens to the grapes once they arrive at the winery and how they're processed and what bottling looks like and the crush pad and then to try the different wines and be like, okay, I grow white grapes, but that could be Viognier, Roussanne, Chardonnay, Sauv Blanc, Pinot Gris. I mean, so many.
So true. Yeah.
And so what are the nuances of what those different wines and taste like, I think makes them a lot smarter and more connected to what they're doing back in the vineyard.
And you have new leadership at the Leadership Academy, right?
Yes, we do. We have a new program manager that's been working with us. program director, Josefina, which is great. She is our first bilingual employee, which is incredibly helpful, as you can imagine.
I would imagine. Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Well, all sorts of good stuff happening right in your world and in the coming weeks and months ahead. So today we have a guest coming to join us, though.
We do.
And we'll introduce him when he comes in the next segment on the good stuff. Happy to have in studio today our guest, Tim Bell, Director of Winemaking for Dry Creek Vineyard. Welcome, Tim.
Hi, thank you, Virginia.
Well, where to start? I guess we always...
At the beginning.
I know,
Chris often
likes to hear about your childhood. So tell us about your childhood,
I'm like,
Tim.
Favorite toys. Yeah. Do you have a best friend?
Yeah, I really like to get deep into
the... Really,
who are you,
sorry,
Tim?
Okay, we're going deep.
But yeah, tell us about your background, kind of where you grew up. Was wine a part of your growing up? Anything? Just tell
sure
us all.
Well, so my story starts as a Midwest native. I'm a native of Iowa, and I always think that it was not an accident that I grew up in a farming community and ended up in the business I'm in. And I had a uncle who had a small dairy operation, and I just was really fascinated by a lot of that gleaming stainless steel equipment that was there in the dairy. And now I get to work with gleaming stainless steel equipment in a different setting. But my family moved to Southern California when I was 8 years old. So I grew up in Southern California in the San Fernando Valley. No winery background whatsoever.
Yeah.
In fact, very little alcoholic beverages in our family. That was an occasional thing. And wine was, you know, Mogan David that we had for communion.
Okay.
But
going way back.
Yeah. So when I was a young adult, I moved to San Diego area. I really loved it down there. And I started working just for work for a late great liquor barn chain that existed that was just starting down there. It was one of the first discount wine and spirits retailers. Really had to learn about the product that I was trying to help customers with. And just really got fascinated with wine in particular. I started reading books, and the history and the romance of winemaking seemed pretty cool. And I worked there for a number of years, not really knowing what my direction in life was going to be. But I remember I read an article, and I don't know what the magazine was, but it was an interview with three different winemakers. It was Bill Bonetti from Sonoma-Cutrer, Selma Long, and Dick Arrowood. And kind of talking about how their path
was. That's a good legend.
Yeah. And so when I read that, I was like, oh, I could do this as a job. Mm. Oh, this could be a career. I went to Davis and studied winemaking and did some internships along the way. I did one. My first one was at Franciscan and Mount Veeder when they were both sister wineries. And then the next year at Gloria Ferrer, and got a really good, well-rounded internship there. And then kind of my main stops along the way is I worked a couple years it's ASV Wines, they call it now. It's a facility in San Martin. So it was Custom Crush. I always say it was my cellar boot camp. Learned how to really run a cellar and do a lot with old equipment that was breaking down. And, you know, you had to make it happen. And
absolutely.
From there, I went to Freemark Abbey in 1996. Started there as assistant winemaker, was promoted to winemaker, got to really delve into high quality winemaking and kind of help modernize their style a little bit. And then next opportunity came at Cundy Family Estate in Sonoma Valley. And that was a great opportunity for the vineyard side of things. So really, you know, with 1,800 acre footprint of vineyards
property
there. Yeah, beautiful property with all different kind of, topography and growing regions and 20 different varieties and so forth. So really got to learn a lot on the vineyard side of things and also influence my winemaking more in the vineyard than I'd been able to do at Fremark Abbey. I was kind of sort of a wall between me and the vineyard mm-hmm. side of things there. So that was great. And
how did that change your perspective on winemaking, getting more connected to the vineyards?
It really just helped me, I think, understand better when, you know, how to make picking decisions. Mm-hmm. One of the things I really realized is, you know, especially a property that was like Kunde, where there was such varied topography mm-hmm. that you'd have a block, but you wouldn't pick it all at one time. You'd really, so I'd spend a lot of time marking off sections. Yeah. And I remember I got a nice compliment from the vineyard crew there one time where, not knowingly, I had apparently marked off sections that corresponded to like irrigation blocks, and they were like, "Oh, he knows."
You know? Wow, good job!
Yeah, made their life easier probably too.
So and it really just kind of helped me decide that the biggest influence I could have on making a great wine was interacting with the vineyard team and really making sure we're on the same page for mm-hmm. for the goals that yeah. we wanted to accomplish.
So when you were at Liquor Barn, and why are there so many barns that sell wine? There's yeah. Bottle Barn now. Was that yeah. like an offshoot of Liquor Barn, or I don't know?
And Boot Barn should sell wine.
Not that I know of, but I love Bottle Barn.
They should. They right? really should. Yeah, that would be very convenient. So when you were back at Liquor Barn, did you get the chance? I mean, you were selling a lot. Were you working on the floor? So you were selling a lot of wine?
Exactly. Yeah, I ended up being a buyer for all the different departments. You know, wine, okay. beer, spirits at different points. And one of the great opportunities there was all these industry tastings.
Yeah.
So I got a great education in wines all around the world.
So were there certain things that you liked kind of right away? Like, do you look back on your tasting experience then, and are you embarrassed like what you liked then compared to what you like now? Or
I am. Or,
yeah, I know. I mean, because, I mean, there is an evolution oftentimes. But, I mean, you're getting exposed to so many different wines. Were there things that you just really liked right away?
I can't look back and say I'm really embarrassed too much about any of what I liked. But my
you like
I guess,
what you like, right? But it
yeah,
does
my, my style preferences maybe have changed over time. But like, you know, my first wines that I enjoyed was things like Kenwood Dry Chenin Blanc or you know, some Chardonnays, some Rieslings too, and then, you know, kind of branched out from there. And I you know, I always think too that it was valuable to taste with people who had more experience mm-hmm. and could tell me what they're tasting, you know, give me a vocabulary. And then later, you know, when I tasted a wine and not knowing it was like, oh, that's Chardonnay. And it was Chardonnay. I was like, oh, okay. I'm starting to
yeah,
know
it's
something
clicking.
Here.
It's starting to click. Yeah.
Yeah.
What were people buying for the most part in that era from that store? Because it's in San Diego. Is that where
it? Yeah. This was in a suburb, La Mesa. It was actually the original store. And then eventually it expanded all over California. Well, in terms of wine, gosh, you know, I mean, Chardonnay was big, Cabernet was big, Merlot was big mm-hmm. back then.
Right, yeah.
But I remember even, especially because, like, Dry Creek Vineyard makes Chenin Blanc and has for over 50 years, that Chenin Blanc was actually a popular variety and had its own section on the shelf back then and then kind of went into obscurity later.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that and Riesling was a lot more popular and a lot more of the large wineries, you know, Behringer, Krug, whatever those kind of wineries were making Riesling as well. And it's kind of a relatively obscure variety, I think, in the big picture of things now.
Yeah, for sure. In California, I would say.
Yeah, I would agree with that too.
So you're at Kunde, you start getting into the vineyards. Is Dry Creek Vineyard your next job?
It was. And what I didn't say, but I think was really important setting me up for Dry Creek was, you know, at Fremark Abbey, I worked with the Bordeaux Reds extensively. Also got experience in some other varieties because we started doing wines for Wine Club. Wine Club was kind of a new concept.
Mm-hmm.
And then Kunde, I really got a lot of experience with making Sauvignon Blanc and Zinfandel. Mm. And so those are kind of all the key categories for Dry Creek Vineyard. We do, you know, Sauvignon Blanc, aromatic whites in general, include the Chenin Blanc with that. And then Zinfandel for sure. I mean, we're in Dry Creek Valley, got to do that. Yeah. And then the Bordeaux Reds definitely had those all covered. So I felt very confident coming in. And what was great is it felt like a really great family atmosphere like we'd had, especially at Fremark Abbey. You know, just a real, the owners really had an idea of what their style was and you know, we matched. So felt like it was a really great, obviously, I've been there the longest of any point in my career. So it's been a really good situation.
So remind me what year you started at Dry Creek Vineyard.
So I was in 1996. Okay. Yeah, that was, sorry, no, 2011. Let me think. That was 1996 was Fremark Abbey.
Oh, okay. I'm confusing you by too many dates, too many places. But,
Dry
okay.
Creek, 2011. That was one of the most challenging vintages in my career.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. You're not alone
got
in
something
that.
Like 6 inches of rain in late early October, and it had already been a cool vintage. Things weren't ripening, and I was just like, oh my God, this is my. I'm trying to make a good impression here. Thanks God.
Right.
I mean, that was just a low yield year all around because of that. Looking back, at least in my experience, I think one of our smallest crops. I kind of started looking at it.
Yeah, absolutely. It's still one of those vintages that you mention it and people sort of, you know, they sort of like wince a little bit.
Wines were turned out just fantastic.
Some great wines
though.
Were made for sure. I just think it took a lot out of winemakers.
Yeah,
I think especially
was a gritty
if you
year.
Were early in your career, experience probably mattered a lot in that regard. But
You know, and I did see some things happen in vineyards that I hadn't ever seen before because of the grapes trying to pump up so much water in such a short period of time. But, you know, one of the things was to make the hard choices, like, you know, like our flagship Bordeaux Red Mariner, we made less than half of what we had intended to that season because we wanted to just really make sure we maintained the level of quality. Some of the wine had to go somewhere else on the bulk market.
Mm-hmm. So tell me how the whole Dry Creek, you know, vineyard job happened. I mean, were you looking to kind of make a move to something, like, were you looking for something different? What were they looking for? How did it all kind of come together?
Yeah, I was looking for something different, and they had, they were starting to do a search as well. So it took quite a while. I first had contact like in late 2010, and then didn't hear anything for a while, and then sort of wrote it off. And then we got back in touch in mid-2011. And it ended up, I didn't come on until just before harvest. It was like third week of August, I think, that I was hired.
That's kind of close.
Trial of fire.
Yeah. Welcome to the new role.
Although they were in a situation where the previous winemaker was going to stay on for a while. So there was some overlap and ability to sort of do a handoff, an exchange of some knowledge there. So it wasn't totally just throwing me to the wolves, but it was a unique situation to come in that close to harvest.
And so, I mean, Dry Creek Vineyard is such a storied kind of family, family winery here in Sonoma County in general, but certainly in Dry Creek. Did you meet, so Dave Stair, the founder, and Kim Stair Wallace, his daughter, is second generation leadership. Did you interview with both of them? And do you have any sort of like interesting
stories
about that?
We want stories.
Because, I mean, it's always interesting family business for sure.
And in full disclosure, Dave Stair is now my neighbor next door. So
that's right. I forgot about that.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I mean, and then there's just not that many father-daughter, you know, businesses either. So tell us, like, who did you meet with and kind of what were they like?
Yeah, I don't recall having a lot of contact with Dave through the hiring process. My initial contact was with Don Wallace's Kim's husband, Dave's daughter, Kim. And Don was you know, in charge of running the winery at that time. You know, Kim was very involved, but she hadn't quite assumed that spot yet. I didn't know that behind the scenes that was coming very soon. But my initial contact was Don. You know, that went really well. You know, I met Kim. And what was most telling to me is we spent more time in this process tasting wines than I had with any other place I'd been before. They wanted me to bring some wines that I had made. And then they, you know, brought some of their wines and we discussed them. And, you know, partly they wanted to make sure that I was making the kind of wines that fit with their style, but also they wanted my input on, like, what would you do differently with these wines? What could you change? And, you know, the good news is that nothing was really broken, you know, but I felt like there was still opportunity to take the wines to a higher level. So, yeah, it was great. But it, but like I said, it was really telling that they had a vision and of what their style is. Not everybody always has that, or even a sense of like, are we good?
You know, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's, I mean, it's a testament to why they're such a well-known and well-loved winery here, I think, and across the world, because they have sort of stuck to a style and their story is so consistent and the family part is so compelling as well. So, yeah, I think to make the investment in just improving the wines and not changing everything is as much, you know, an important part of leadership as anything else.
Yeah.
So...
Yes.
I think we have to take a break.
I know.
Okay, we will take a break. Come back with our guest, Tim Bell. Today is Tim Bell, Director of Winemaking for Dry Creek Vineyard, and we were talking about sort of how you ended up Dry Creek Vineyard, sort of the process by which you got the job. We're analyzing wines, they were analyzing your wines. So over these last 12 years or so, or is it more than that, since you started?
Been over 13 now.
13, yeah. Okay, my math is off.
It's 2025, just FYI.
I don't want to accept that.
We're like towards the end of February. It's still hard to conceptualize that.
Okay. I'm still in 23 vintage, I guess. Maybe that's what it is. What has evolved? I mean, how has your winemaking evolved? Or have you just gotten a little bit deeper into the vineyard side at Dry Creek? And what has evolved there?
Yeah, you know, it's funny you should ask that, because I've just over the last year or so been kind of contemplating that a little bit. And I feel like when I started at Dry Creek, I was probably more looking to make, you know, bigger, bolder, you know, kind of wines, you know.
Yeah.
And I feel like I've started to appreciate subtlety a little more and sometimes delicacy. And you know, I think Zinfandel is a you know, Zinfandel, you can work with it to make it really big and dark, and you know, use Petit Sirah or whatever to really steer it in that direction. And I love blending with Petit Sirah, but kind of just appreciating the nuances of Zinfandel on its own has really, I think, helped teach me more subtlety.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've come to appreciate that.
And how do you achieve that? Is it better vineyard practices? Is it sort of getting a little bit more into the decisions there, or how have you changed? Like, what did you need to change to achieve that?
I think a lot of it was my technique at the winery. You know, just how aggressive maybe in extracting the grapes, and also, you know, the blending. You know, like I said, you know, how much other varieties we might use that as blenders with the Zinfandel. And just being more comfortable about letting the grape and the vineyards express their own personalities.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we've talked a lot about Dry Creek Vineyard just being such a legacy property and brand and winery and family. But can you, just for those who may not know, can you give us just a little bit of the background on Dry Creek Vineyard and kind of the history and the family?
Yeah, there is a great history there.
You know, trailblazers, to some extent,
really,
right?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, they were started in 1972 by David Stair that we mentioned, and it was the first new winery to be opened in Dry Creek Valley since the end of Prohibition. And, you know, it had been a once pretty thriving grape-growing region, and kind of, you know, there were still vineyards, but a lot of other crops had taken place of grapes.
And before it was officially an AVA.
Exactly,
too, right?
Yeah.
So that happened.
Yeah. In fact, David Stair got in a little bit of trouble because before it was an AVA, he put Dry Creek area on a wine label. And BATF back then was like, not so great. So he had to get it like a use up permit to use up that label. But it was shortly thereafter that he and some other locals formed the AVA. And, you know, he's the first to plant Sauvignon Blanc. You know, in our story, and we're sticking to it, is we were the first to use old vine on a Zinfandel label. So, and there's other things too, you know, being part of the group that formed the Meritage Alliance. Winery's been a part of a lot of important firsts, part of that great class of 72 that people like to talk about.
Yeah, for sure. I was just trying to think about, I mean, the first winery after Prohibition, because there's certainly a lot of longstanding families that stayed on the farming side.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But they just didn't necessarily have winery operations going.
Right.
So Dave Steyer comes in, he puts a winery in. Who else was around? Do you have a sense of that? I mean, the Raffinellis perhaps, or?
Well, Pedroncelli, for
yep.
sure.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not sure I was... You know, I was told maybe there was like one or two other wineries actually in operation, and I think Pedroncelli was one.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Yeah.
Yeah, possibly.
And it wasn't too long after Dave started that other people did start, you know, opening up wineries. It was just seems like throughout California, 1972, mm-hmm. that 73 was kind of this big explosion of a new modern era in winemaking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But the Dry Creek General Store was definitely there, and the bar in the Dry Creek
right.
General Store
yeah.
was definitely there. But
infamous.
Can you imagine? I mean, 1972 Healdsburg,
right?
Even 2011 Healdsburg to today. That's been quite a transformation.
Yeah, and Kim tells that, you know, they were like considered the crazy people, you know, that from out of town that were going to come build a winery. It's like
out in the country.
Yeah.
Yeah. At that point
in the hinterlands.
Well, Dave's original plan actually was to not do the winery at the location it's at now. He wanted to open it on West Dry Creek Road. He had bought a property there as well. And the for whatever reason, I'm not sure, the county supervisors denied him the opportunity to do that, but he was sort of told off record, you know, if you try to do it at this other property at, you know, on the corner of Lambert Bridge Road and Dry Creek Road, or yeah, that we'll approve that. And so he did. And it actually turned out to be a lot better spot, I think.
Wow, they were helpful.
Yeah. Not helpful and then helpful.
Yeah, yeah, not helpful and then helpful.
Denied, but yet approved.
So did he hold on to that property on West Dry Creek, or what's there now? Do you know?
Yeah, no, he did have a house there. I guess there may have been a house on the property. I'm not sure, but he lived there for a while with his family. But it's since been sold to another owner. But there's still vineyard on the property.
Okay.
Well,
yeah.
And there's also a strong nautical theme to Dry Creek Vineyard, mm-hmm. based on Dave's love. Do you have any of that backstory?
Well, the family has always enjoyed sailing, and I know on one of our labels from back in the 90s, I read something about Dave had a yacht from some famous. I mean, not a yacht, a sailing boat. You know, it probably wasn't that big, but it was some famous designer. Whose name I can't recall, but and then they were sailing, you know, one time on San Francisco Bay and having some Fumé Blanc and I think it was kind of the time when people were starting to get away from a more traditional look on wine labels, and they just thought, well, we really enjoy sailing, why don't we put a sailboat on our label? And maybe it'll even be a little bit humorous that we're Dry Creek Vineyard with a sailing ship.
Yeah,
on the label.
Well, they've stuck to it.
They've stuck to it, yeah. And then, you know, they really did run with it. They commissioned these different paintings by mm-hmm. one particular artist, Michael Searles, and they're all J-boats, particular kind of racing boats. I'm not really a sailor, so I don't know that much about it. But they chose a look and a theme for each wine that those boats are on. So it kind of became a thing.
So you mentioned the Fumé Blanc. People
yes.
don't always understand the difference between, like, what is Fumé Blanc versus what is Sauvignon Blanc. Can you give us a quick one-on-one on that?
Sure. Yeah, so Fumé Blanc is just a synonym that we're allowed to use for Sauvignon Blanc, and given to the wine world by Robert Mondavi. And because they did a barrel-fermented version with some new oak, a lot of people expect the wine to follow that. But for our tradition has been for quite a while to actually, you know, most of our Sauvignon Blancs really focus on stainless steel fermentation, cool temperature fermentation with no oak and no malolactic. So, it was just a name that was popular at the time, and people maybe thought Sauvignon was too big a mouthful for the public. So Fumé Blanc was a nice alternative.
Okay. And some of that, I mean, isn't that somewhat following a style that's inspired by the Loire Valley versus Bordeaux?
Yeah, that Dave was inspired by the wines, white wines of the Loire Valley. So that's why we've done Sauvignon Blanc and Chenin Blanc for over 50 years continuously. And so we do continue to make that Fumé Blanc alongside of our Dry Creek Valley Sauvignon Blanc. You know, the Fumé is kind of our classic style, little lower ripeness, and, you know, slightly green qualities or slightly herbaceous qualities to the wine. And the Sauvignon Blanc is a little bit riper style using newer clones and selections and a tiny bit of barrel fermentation as well.
And I do spy a bottle of something over there that I think we should open after the break. I don't know about you.
Yeah, I think, how can I say no? All right, well, we'll take a quick break and we'll come back and open a bottle of Dry Creek Vineyard Sauvignon Blanc with Tim Bell. Good stuff with our guest today, Tim Bell, Director of Winemaking for Dry Creek Vineyard. And you were explaining kind of the difference between Fumé Blanc, Sauvignon Blanc, but Carissa spied something that she wanted to open. There we go.
Did you hear that, everyone?
Love
that's
that sound.
Me opening some wine.
All right, we'll give a moment of silence for you to pour it. yeah, so tell us about the wine that you brought, Tim, and then we'll get into maybe some of the other types of wines that people can experience at Dry Creek Vineyard.
Yeah, so this is a wine that is really reflects the second generation, you know, David's daughter Kim and her husband Don and their influence on the winery, and does really start in the vineyard. It's a newer style for us. We've used some unique clones or selections of Sauvignon Blanc. So there's Sauvignon Musquet. Really has beautiful aromatics, lower acidity than a lot of other Sauvignon Blanc selections. And then also Sauvignon Gris, very kind of obscure selection.
I know that.
Yeah, not very many people grow that. I haven't seen it in any other vineyards so far in Sonoma County. But
we'll have to check on that.
It has kind of a copper gray color, a little bit like Pinot Gris when it gets ripe, and very low. It really doesn't have any sort of those herbaceous characters that Sauvignon Blanc might have. But we do pick this at a little higher ripeness than for the Fumé Blanc. Also more leaf pulling, so getting more fruit in light in the fruit zone. And, really bringing out some of those riper flavors. That being said, it's not like a super ripe style. We're still kind of in that window for a Dry Creek Vineyard of having crisp, fresh whites. And then it's 80%. Give or take, each year fermented in cool stainless steel tanks for a long period. And then the rest of it is barrel fermented. But that was, you know, one of the things that I played around with before we really committed to this is different types of wood and didn't really like the toastiness that was getting from a lot of new oak barrels. So we've moved to using primarily acacia wood barrels, which is a much milder flavor impact, but still gives us some of the benefits of that nice contact with lees and fermenting in barrels. So a little bit richer mouthfeel. Also use a small amount of chestnut wood barrels. This does have a pretty profound flavor impact, but it's kind of this vanilla cream quality. So we use it in a small percentage. And I like it when the barrels have had, you know, one or two fills, and then you get this really nice balance with the wines. So, you know, things like that. And more recently, I had the opportunity to add clone 530 Sauvignon Blanc to our home vineyard, the DCV3 vineyard. So we're just starting to work with that and learn what that's going to offer. But I've used that in the past and really love the aromatics of that. So little bit different style and some different things that we've got to play with. That's really exciting for us.
It all adds up to delicious.
To deliciousness. Okay.
And yummy. There you go.
So in the time we have left, maybe I know you make, there's a wide variety of wines that you can enjoy at Dry Creek Vineyard. Explain the Meritage program, though, because that's a little bit less obvious, perhaps.
Sure. Yeah, so Meritage is a term that was coined back in the mid-80s. And it was David Stair was part of this group of some other grape growers and winemakers who wanted to create a term that they could use for wines that were blends. So, you know, like if we call a wine Sauvignon Blanc or Cabernet Sauvignon, has to be at least 75% of that grape. They wanted to do wines that could be like maybe 40% Cabernet and 30% Merlot and, you know, add some of the other reds in there. And so the only term that was sort of available to them at the time was something like you'd call it red wine or red table wine. Mm-hmm. And if people saw like red table wine, they associated that with jug wines and lower quality. So they held this contest to come up with a term that would reflect, you know, these are some high-end Bordeaux style blends. And, you know, Dave has told me they thought, oh, they'd get a few 100 entries maybe at tops, but then the Wine Spectator got a hold of this and it sort of became a nationwide thing. You know, there was something exciting to write about, I guess.
That's awesome.
So they got thousands of entries, but they did settle on someone who came up with the term Meritage, and it's a combination of the merit of Bordeaux and the heritage, or sorry, the merit of your best blends and the heritage of the Bordeaux region of France.
Okay.
And so people tend to want to Frenchify it and say Meritage, but is Meritage.
Okay. We need to take another quick break. We'll be right back to wrap things up with Tim Bell. To wrap things up with our guest Tim Bell from Dry Creek Vineyard, and just quickly, the tasting room can be found 3770 Lambert Bridge Road in Healdsburg, open Thursday through Monday 10 to 4:30 p.m. You can enjoy all these wines and a whole lot more. So we don't have a lot of time left. First of all, Tim, we're gonna do our Tuesday night wines, but supposedly you make one of the world's greatest hamburgers. Signature burger. I don't know. I haven't had it.
From
I can't
Iowa.
Say.
There's good beef back there.
Exactly. So
that's right.
What is your Tuesday night wine go to with your signature burger?
Well, if I'm grilling burgers, I'm usually going to go for a Zinfandel. So our Heritage Vine Zinfandel, I think, would be a great match for that.
Well, I'm going to keep rolling because I'm assuming Tim's going to bite me over. So I'm also going to bring some Zinfandel appropriately. But I'm going to have the Vogensen Ranch. It's the, I think 2020 is the current release. And Matt Vogensen's on our board. He's great. So going to celebrate burgers, Zin, and thank you, board members.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I guess I better bring a white just to counter all the reds for maybe something that we have before the burgers. I'm going with one of the classics, 2023 DCV3 Sauvignon Blanc. A vineyard-designated Sauvignon Blanc. You mentioned it kind of briefly during our conversation. I'm having that.
I love it.
Okay.
So Tim didn't know he's inviting us over for dinner on Tuesday night, but surprise.
I know. Burgers. Burgers for everyone. Okay, so we mentioned the tasting room, the website, drycreekvineyard.com. People should come visit, don't you think, Tim?
Absolutely. We've got a great team there, and they'll take really good care of you, and you'll enjoy a lot of choices of some amazing wines.
And you don't necessarily have to have a reservation. You can just drop on in. There's nice picnic grounds. You can take a little stroll through. There's a
beautiful
vineyard that explains a lot of the history and a little bit about the vineyard.
Yeah, we have a nice a little insectary garden there that has a host of beneficial insects that also gives you some history of the winery and tells you about our region.
And there's lots of fun social media posts, too. So they should follow along on Instagram. I know there's been some fun videos. So at Dry Creek Vineyard is the Instagram handle.
Wow.
I know. That's all the things.
How do we keep it all on track?
Yeah. That is all the things.
Okay. Any big events coming up this year? I know there was the big anniversary a couple years ago, but anything to...
Nothing quite that big, but we always have different events going on. Like we just a week or two ago completed our annual barrel tasting event that people love. You know, each year we've always got the Summer of Zin with the you know, a band out on the lawn in beautiful weather and love some that. Good food and wine to enjoy. So, yeah, check out the website. There's, I'm sure I'm forgetting a lot of things. That
that's all right.
Up.
Check out the website. Okay. Well, we want to thank you for joining us today from Sonoma County to wherever you are. Remember to drink the good stuff.
Cheers to that.